Yeah. No, but that mentality, you're right, Johnny. I don't know. Part of me is like stiff upper lip and all that. You know what I mean? Like really, like that is an important skill. It's something that I think mentally healthy people are able to do in a way that's so, but sometimes I think it's actually not the right way to move through the world. Like, yeah, you gotta take time to process and to not, but I can't decide, you know what I mean? Because I think I can lean into recovery mode too much. Yeah, like allowing too much space for grief.
But grief does, no matter what, it does show up in the body. I mean, with the Olympics going on, we know just how true that is. Like, Simone Biles, the greatest of all time, like, you know, she talks about mental health all the time. And it's like, if it's not rock solid, you can't just flip your way through it, like to like try and make it better. It shows up, like, so yeah.
I think we should explain, because I know we talked about it last week too, but like you're referencing when she had the twisties in Japan.
Correct. Yeah, the pressure of going to Tokyo was part of the reason that it showed up in her body in the way that it did. So like that kind of pressure, and that's why she, like, even this past time in Paris, she's been going to therapy every other day so that she could remain mentally like not clouded by everything. And then, you know, when you're getting up on that vault or when you're getting up on that beam, all those things are clouding your brain, you know?
Yeah, while you're in the air, you lose sense of where you are. Mm-hmm. So your body and your brain
are going to separate places. Like, it is a physical reaction.
She didn't know what she was going to do before she did it, like, blew my mind. She was like, I don't know what I'm about to do, but I'm still going. I'm like, still going.
That's,
I'm like,
so dangerous. Yeah.
Crazy to me. But you know, I think about, like, you know, this stage manager who told the Cirque people, like, yes, we lost someone, but like, leave it at the door. Mm-hmm. In those moments, I'm like, sometimes like I thought about, actually, have you guys ever been in a performance or had to push through something after hearing some ridiculous, crazy news that was either personal to you or that you lost a castmate, like some crazy, you know, something kind of, what's the word? Tragic, like a tragedy happening and then having to kind of push through?
For me, not so much, but I remember in the first season of Hacks, Jean Smart, her husband passed away unexpectedly, and we had to halt filming. I think we halted it for a week or two, and she came back to work, and it, you know, it's just, it's a lot. It's you know, especially the lead of the show, and who, you know, everyone's counting on her, and, you know, everyone, she came back, you know, consummate professional, you know, of course she was going through her grief, but she was stellar. I mean, she won the Emmy that year, but it takes a toll. And also this past time when I did Station 19, one of the guys that ran the fire trucks, he passed away during filming, and he had been with them for the whole show, you know. So they took a lot of time to, like, honor him, you know, took time out of the day. Obviously, like, in Hollywood, you know, the show must go on. There's millions of dollars at stake. But I thought they did a wonderful job, both Hacks and Station 19, with honoring very real life circumstances. And it never felt like, well, all right, we gotta keep it moving, you know, like, but it did feel, I do feel like that's more of a stage and screen mentality. I don't know. Then screen mentality.
I'm trying to think of an example. I'm sure there has been. I mean, how about this? Like, maybe not a tragedy, but a really significant injury.
Yeah, that's
like someone, you know, like, honey, when you see that kneecap and it's on the wrong side of the knee, baby.
Oh my God, did you hear it? The sound is the worst.
I've heard it and I've seen both. Like,
was it your legs? No.
No, not mine, not mine.
Was it your legs?
No, not mine, not mine.
One was in a rehearsal for West Side Story, and Michael Puglisi won't mind me sharing this. It was Michael Puglisi.
Oh.
And baby, that knee gave way. I think it was during Tech. It was either during Tech or one of the first performances of West Side Story that we were doing. He was playing a jet. Michael Puglisi is a renowned physical personal trainer here in the city and dancer, musical theater performer. But his main bread and butter these days is he's a Barry's instructor. And he was one of the, but so he was one of the Jets, right? That's what they're called. Yes. Forgive me.
Are you well? Are you unwell today?
Only 2000 performances later. Yes. And he was one of the Jets, and like, you know, to see that. And then, so that was one of those injuries where like, he's not coming back tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's not coming back to the show tomorrow.
Yeah.
And that is, it's a very, a chorus line kind of moment of like what I did for love. You kind of, it becomes, you become very introspective when someone has, because it literally is like in a chorus line, you know, when someone has that injury, you think, okay, well, what now? What now?
Yeah.
Big league. So I experienced that a few times, and just, you know, when something happens or that kind of shakes a company and makes you really realize what really matters. I mean, it's not the tragedy, it's certainly not like Gene and the loss of course, you know, their spouse, which is really terrible. For those of you who don't know, right before we started recording, Johnny was sharing how in a documentary about Cirque, was it a documentary? Tell them.
Amazon what Prime. No, I was just saying that there was a death in the company in the show, and not in the show, not during the show, but someone in the show had passed away, and the stage manager was kind of like, "All right, you know, we're all dealing with this. Unfortunately, we wanted to tell you now. We wanted to tell you now, but rather than before, because that would have messed with your." I think they told him after rehearsal or something like that. But you know, we have the weekend, so by next week we gotta leave it in this week or something like that. So I'm not direct quoting him, but it was kind of like, I remember eating dinner. I looked up, I was like, I don't like the way he said that. Like, I just was like feeling protective of these people who probably just lost a friend.
I think about some of the other stage managers I've had. I'm thinking about one in particular, Andy Fenton, who was like our dad at Mamma Mia, a fellow Brit. And his demeanor and his stoicism was always a little intimidating. You never kind of knew, like, are you in a good mood or not? You know, because he was quite literally the driest person in the theater, but was also very, very protective of us. And I've learned this because I've had the driest father in the world. Like, talk about like a dry dad. Like, my dad is that, and who's not maybe the most affectionate or like emotionally talky. He just doesn't communicate in feelings, you know what I mean? But there's a way that I know and feel based off of our relationship and our experiences that he would do anything for me if he could protect me in a second. And to this day, he's 88 years old and he could still, you know, do the damn thing. And I wonder if like that stage manager maybe also has a relationship with the castmates like that they know that's just how that guy talks. But like, we love, you know, it's like his way. It is. That's
it's his love language.
Exactly. It's as chummy as he can get. And and his way of taking care of the cast is reminding them of, you know, like, just what we get to do moving forward, and how, you know, it's interesting. It's like to see people do things differently than the way we would.
Yeah.
Always brings up, obviously, like, I maybe wouldn't have done it that way, you know. Juan.
By the way, I just wanted to share that Michael Puglisi, my dear Michael Puglisi, his knee is 100% nowadays. You know, he's one very. Everything is working. Everything is working. You can look it up for yourself and find out.
Oh, I love that.
But here nor there. No, I think that's true. it's funny how when we were, you know, that is how some people, you know, move through the world. That some people move through the world by just kind of trudging through the trauma and the pain. And at the beginning of our conversation offline, before we even began, the kind of theme that arose naturally was, how much space do you give to allow for almost how much time do you give yourself to, how would I say this distinctly? To breathe, to to grieve or to deal with something, right? Mm-hmm. To grieve and breathe. How much time do you give yourself? What's appropriate? At what point are you giving yourself too much time? Mm-hmm. And should you just be kind of pushing through and stiff upper lip and all that, you know? Yeah. You know, and I was sharing that I, as I've gotten older, I have become more willing to give myself space to grieve and be sad and really take time, deliberate time to try to heal or to try to think through things. But I wonder if I've kind of, that pendulum has swung a little bit too far in that direction, because I can get a little lost in it because I spend so much time giving myself freedom to unwind. You know, it's like the windmills of my mind get lost in some of my troubles from time to time. So it's an interesting, because it's hard to balance. I think one of the great things we talked about before that therapy is for is to kind of help work through those things in a timed way. If you're like, okay, we're here for an hour,
let's
be productive and think through this, and then on my own I can kind of mull it over, but I'm not unpacking this and surviving this alone.
Right.
Yeah.
That's huge. Mm-hmm. That's huge.
Mm-hmm.
While we're sharing stories of injuries and tragedies.
Oh yes.
I'll just one that was the injury was mine. And it was the closing of Atlantic Theater Company's This Ain't No Disco. It was a Studio 54. It was about, I always forget Steve's last name, but the owner of Studio 54. And it was really fun. And it was the writers of Hedwig and the Angry Inch. And it was a great show. It's our final show. And there was this entrance I had where I like swung. It was giving rent, kind of. Actually, Jason Sherwood, friend of the pod. Sherwood's design.
Another mention.
Uh-huh. And we're full of those. And I like do a little swing on this bar, like, you know, like a little early before the spotlight hits me. And it's kind of a striptease burlesque moment where you come in to watch like three go-go boys, like, you know, very big spender vibes. Yes. And I was so excited, and I literally, I'm not even lying, before entering stage, I was like, ooh, I was like, I have a lot of adrenaline. I'm like, I feel crazy this show. I literally said it outside. I was like, doo, doo, doo. And then I like swung, but I swung extra hard. Yeah. And when I let go of the bar, my head hit a nail or like a bolt, and it hit, and I swung so hard and hit the bolt that it stopped me mid in the air. I fell on my back, and there was no like light on me yet, but it was also at the smallest theater in the fucking world, so if you just turned your head, you just like see a body that's like in the dark, but they fell, and I was like, oh fuck, ow. And then I'm like touching myself, and like I had some time before my entrance like for the light to hit me, and I was like, wow, I'm really sweating, I'm like really dripping sweat. And I like looked down, and I was bleeding, and I like walked off stage, and I'm going down the stairs, and Christina Alabado, I'll never forget, she's walking up the stairs, and she looks at me, and she literally looks like she looks like saw a ghost.
Yeah.
Because by this point I just had like drip, blood. And I just walked off, and I went outside or went backstage, and you know, like our stage manager, I forget her name right now, but Lizzie, I think, was like, hey, why are you off stage? I was like, I'm, you know, in those moments, you're so calm.
Yeah.
You're so calm. You're actually like, okay, so I just hit my head on a bolt, and I'm bleeding right now. And
my brain's like, coming out.
Yeah, I'm like, you know, but you're like, it's bizarre. You're actually not frantic. And they sat me down, and she's like looking. She's like, okay, yep, you definitely, yes, you have a gash. And then like they tended to me. And obviously I missed that number, that fabulous number. That was like my favorite one to do. But I made it for the next one, and we like iced, and we stopped enough of the bleeding, and I was okay. I was just like, because what else are we going to do? It would be a little ridiculous. You just kind of do that. You go like, I can do it. Mm-hmm. And so I went out and I finished the whole show. No one in the audience had any idea. Demarius Cope's friend of the pod was out, and I was like, hi. After we said hello to everybody, Josh Green, I remember they're like, oh my God, that was so great, blah, blah, blah. And I'm asking, I'm like, did you see the thing? Did you see when I fell? Like, well, we heard something, but like, we didn't really know, like, what? And I'm like, oh, I fully, and then I explain the story. And mm-hmm. they're like, we would have never known. Anyway, so that was my story. And I went to the ER and I got 6 staples from like a staple gun in my head. Mm-hmm. And then I went to the opening night party. Isn't that wild?
The show did go on.
It did. There are moments where, like, you know, obviously if you stop the bleeding, mm-hmm. you're fine. Yeah. It's more of like a metaphor.
But isn't it amazing? And I think it is the, like, the theater kid, like that ultimate show must go on. Mm-hmm. And talking about giving yourself enough time to recover or to grieve, you know, to giving yourself the space to do those things. I definitely rushed way to get back into the show. This is also West Side Story. When I was touring, we had I got hit in the head. Is, you know, that's the, I'll Quentin Tarantino it to you. That's what happened. I'll tell you how it happened in West Side Story, in that like the 2009 revival version, which had like in Spanish and in English. There was a fence that came down at the end of Act One or the beginning of Act Two. I can't remember. Ian, when does that fence, when do we go into the the rumble? It's end of Act One.
End of Act One.
Quintet, yeah. So we do the quintet and like everyone is singing on either side of the stage, right? Like the Sharks over here and it's like, the Sharks are going to get to this tonight. The Jets are going to get to this tonight. Anita's going to get her kicks tonight. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You do that number and then it's a blackout and a fence comes down. And now if you were in a big enough theater, like it would be a hard fence, or on Broadway too, it was a hard fence that people could climb over. Mm-hmm. The sharks would run into the house, run through the aisles and then climb it and hop over onto the stage. Just made it feel like, okay, we're in a new space. Time for the rumble, baby.
Yeah.
But in the city, we were in Worcester, Massachusetts. It was just a soft good. It was a fake fence, but at the bottom, it has a pole. It's mesh, but it has a long pole to keep it weighted down.
Weighted down, yeah.
And, you know, so the quintet happens tonight. Oh. Bump! And we're supposed to run across the stage to re-enter. And I'm crossing, but you've got to go slow because it's so dark. You can't really run because there's people crossing. So I'm like going, and I hear a sound that's like, phew, like, I just kind of heard it. You know what I mean? And I looked up and baby, that pole from that soft, good fence, that got me gunk like that. Oh, like down.
Oh no.
Down. Gunk. I made it to the side of the stage and I was like, I think I don't feel at home. Vomiting. Vomiting.
Oh my God. No,
bitch, vomitasia Barino, okay? Okay, vomitasia Barino all over stage right.
Oh,
and
no.
Everyone's like, what is happening? Oh, no, and it fucked up. It hurt another cast member. It hurt the shoulder of one of the crew members. I think someone broke a finger from that too. It was like, it was calamitous, okay?
Oh. God, calamity
from this pole, exactly. So I went to the ER, exactly. It was, so I go to the ER. Bitch, I'm in Worcester, Massachusetts. I'm like, what is happening? I'm in my costume. I've got like fake bruises. Or no, do I have fake bruises on? No, not yet. No fake bruises on. I'm in my costume, but I'm bloodied because I cut myself. And I have the worst. I had a really serious concussion. Oh. And when I was a little kid, I didn't have a stutter, but I just kind of suffered a little bit with the letter M. Sometimes I would hold on to the letter M a little bit more than I should have, right? So it would be like commence or like, you know, mom, just a little bit. And will you know it? I am at that hospital and the first thing that came on, I was like, my mom is the person we should call. It was like, oh my God. And I didn't know what, I knew that I had gotten my head hit, but I was really, really woozy. And you know, when you're on it, when you see on a TV show, like in the 90s shows, like he has amnesia. I didn't have amnesia, but you know, when you're a kid, you're like, what does that even mean? You forgot everything, but I kind of did forget. I mean, I knew where I was. I knew the year, but that weird thing. Anyway, the point is to this very hilarious and yet calamitous story is that I went home. I was out of the show for a little bit, but because I wanted to be a team player, and because we were on the road and we were we had so many injuries already because West Side Story was so prone to injuries. We were always like understaffed. We never had enough people. And so it was putting my cast members in a lot of tension because the people had to do two jobs because I wasn't in it and there's another person went in it. And I remember going back into the show and it was too soon, you know?
Yes, and I do. Tracy Victoria Goldberg.
Correct. I think about her often about that. And I often wonder if that did any long-term damage, kind of really doing that because I'm not well. Because there are signs of cognitive decline.
I too
have considered endorsing Kamala to replace me in the Randy role of my life.
Maybe.
This is a total tangential thing, but I mentioned to Johnny before, but I want to mention to him on camera. Look at him. For those on the YouTube, just look at him. Let's just look at Johnny for a second, Ian.
Oh, gosh.
The flavors. The flavors.
The flavors are beautiful. Love that. Oh, my God.
You know. we're going to be handling some really fun spilled milk in a minute, but before that I just want to share I was out on Fire Island this weekend.
Mm-hmm. Yes, how was it?
It was very fun. It was very, very chill. I was there with my dear bestie Cody Rigsby. It was just the two of us and we had some quality time. It was really, really sweet.
Just the two of you?
It ended up
being so sweet.
It ended up being just the two of us. It was very impromptu. And I had my other dear friends, Kevin Metzger and his husband, Chris Timpson, were there. And my friend, Thomas Ortiz. There were a lot of people that are near and dear to me were there. But we ended up spending quite a bit of time together, just the two of us. And Cody, like us, has an encyclopedia when it's an adjective. Encyclopedic. Really? The word is encyclopedic. Oh my God. He, like us, also has like so much knowledge of TikTok and like memes and utter brain rot. So there were entire chunks of conversation where we're just like Spagliato with Prosecco in it. What was that? What now? Like, just no real words were
joggers.
Exchanged. It was just, do you know how many times it was? Joggers, joggers, spring.
Brain rot.
What, just utter brain rot. But I love brain rot so much. I kind of love it. I just love it.
How did it get coined brain rot?
Because your brain is so rotted from just ingesting TikTok. All of this. Like,
yeah, no, I understand why it's being called that. But like, why? Who was like brain rot? Like, it's just trivia. It. It's just information.
Google it.
Google it. Google it. Google it. Google it. Okay.
We could literally respond in any sort of like today. I did a TikTok of someone's like, "You're gay. That's like the worst thing you could be." And I used the sound from Nene Leakes that was like, "Keep saying it. Keep saying it.
Keep saying it.
Keep saying it. Maybe you'll convince Hope because you won't be convincing anyone over here."
Nene Leakes has created. So much brain rot opportunities.
She literally is the walking urban dictionary.
Yeah, she really is. She is the
walking. She is the walking urban, like being created, like Shakespeare, coining phrases, idioms, like just churning them out.
Yeah.
I will say though, it was very sweet of you to include me in like, just like us, like Cody Rigsby, blah, blah. But like, let's be real. You both are the ones who have
brain rot.
Yeah, you both have brain rot. That's a beautiful thing. And I'm over here trying to catch up, like, stinky in the brain, and I want you guys to, like, feed me all this information.
Pinky.
Yeah, pinky.
But I like it. I like that you guys are brain rot.
I like that autistic man. Is it okay that I tell him I like that? I like that autistic man.
Where was I that I was saying? It was at 4th of July or like it was maybe in LA. Like it had just been freshly taught to me by Yuhuan. And so naturally I was like, this is now mine. And so I was like saying it a lot because it just was so funny. And I think, you know why I like when you both give me references is because I now like the reference because of how you told it to me. Yes. I think it's funny because of how y'all say it to me, not because of the source material.
Oh, that's sweet. That's sweet. Our delight in it is informs it.
Correct.
Oh, that's sweet. That's sweet. Yeah, I mean, I love when people send me a meme that they love. I love that because it opens up a whole new world. You know, my friends, our dear friend Sloane Solomon or Sloane Steele. I used to have to use her internet name, Sloane Steele. She's a meme queen through and through.
One of the OGs.
She's so deep in meme culture. It's inspiring to see how her brain works and how she can create meme language. But this weekend, the one I was revisiting one from the Real Housewives of Atlanta a lot. That is, it's Nene and Dwight. It's not just Nene, but a fashion show without fashions. How dreadful. That is a hilarious thing to say. A fashion show without fashions. You know what's one of my other favorite Real Housewives of Atlanta things? I love this moment where I think it's in the same scene actually, where Dwight and Nene are talking about Cynthia.
Mm-hmm.
But they put a T at the end of her name, Cynthia. It is.
That is a deep cut.
Miss Cynthia. Miss Cynthia is insane. It's insane. But anyway, I love that.
You know, I love going to a party. Wow. And. Like, if it's not, like, if we're not loving being like, this ain't the Oscars, is it? We bring our own drinks up in places like this.
I love an aside. Like, I love, like, a grabbing something here and, like, it's very Southern, you know?
So many good moments. I will also never, ever forget, ever in my life, Sheree and Kim Zolciak sitting in Kim Zolciak's convertible outside of a
Kim
restaurant.
Kim Zolciak, as if there's an H.
As an H. I added that.
Aideen.
Aideen. Zolciak. I'm supposed to say Zolciak, right?
Yeah.
Okay, Kim Zolciak and Sheree sitting outside of a recording studio that's in a strip mall. Mm-hmm. Kim is drinking white wine out of a glass in the driver's seat, smoking, and they're listening to Kim's single in the car as she sings over it. It is an insane moment in television. And it was so early on in The Real Housewives that they would often do confessionals on the fly. This is very rare. There's only a few examples where, like, they don't wait. They do the confessional in real time.
Yeah.
And Sheree is so funny. She goes, she's like, I didn't know that she was a singer. A great singer. She has a great voice. I love to hear her sing. Yeah. Great song. It's just a great moment. Anyway, here nor there. A lot of brain rot this weekend.
Wow.
Any brain rot moments that you've been clinging on to lately?
I'm trying to think. What are some TikTok? I mean, have you guys seen? We need to find a new term. Like what's like brain growth? I think it's brain growth.
But it's not. It's rot because you're not learning.
I know,
anything.
But it makes me laugh. Learning, it makes me laugh. Like this when she's like, have y'all seen the girl who does the? I haven't met anybody from Nebraska. I don't know anyone that's from Nebraska. What do people from Nebraska do?
Yes.
Wait, blah, blah, blah. And they just probably just say the word Nebraska, like Nebraska, blah, blah. She's like Maine. She's like, who's from Maine? She is so fucking hilarious.
Mean people from Maine. Everyone's Maine and Maine. Mean and Maine.
She's like, but that's okay. If y'all fuck with me, I'll still fuck with you if you're from Maine. I love her. Love her. If you fuck with me, I still fuck with you. I just love that. That's as new as I've gotten with my like sort of content. I'm into cucumbers right now. Have you guys seen Logan who makes cucumbers? Mm. Yeah. Well, I've always been into cucumbers, actually. I think he's a chef. He's just so good at like flavor.
Oh, I know who you're talking about. He like puts it in the Shakes thing, it. And then like I saw one where he like shook and like he was eating with chopsticks. Yes. I was like, oh, that looks so
and
good.
It's everything. It's
he makes everything.
It's incredible.
Good.
And I made it yesterday. I literally saw his videos and
look at that.
One thing I know for sure Ooh. Is I
oh, put a pin in
Oh, so don't say it now.
No.
Okay.
No, say it.
You can say it right now. Yeah.
clap. Here. This cut. This moment. One thing I know for sure is I will buy a kitchen gadget. If you sell me the ease and the fun at which like speed and efficiency come into fruition in this object, I will buy that thing. That
just happened to me yesterday. Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Well, I didn't buy it yet, but I put it on my list of Amazon buys. Was a microplaner.
Oh, like shoo, 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 shoo. Oh, yeah, that's what I bought. That's what he uses to do like, right? That's what I'm talking about. Where you can take a cucumber and you go. What,
for lemon zest?
For lemon zest?
The microplaner.
Like the a zester, they call it a zester, but you can put a nut. It's
a grater. Yes. Oh, sorry. Grater, got it. Yeah. I see what you're saying. Yeah, oh, that's a good one.
But it's
It really makes grated garlic. Long.
The fashion one.
Maybe be careful with your fingers with that. Fingers. It will take your entire finger off, Jimmy Fallon style.
Oh.
Remember what happened with him? You don't remember what happened with him, Johnny? That thing happened where like...
I'm just laughing because he said it and then I'm like... Blink, blink, and you're like, you don't know what happened.
Maybe it is giving brain rot.
I think I remember. No, quite literally. I do remember him having a bandage over his finger, but I don't need to know the story.
If you didn't want to see Juan's booty hole, you don't want to know about Jimmy's.
I hate that. Like, Philip was showing me big videos of there's like a trend of gymnasts like hurting themselves.
No, absolutely not. Yes.
Which is like
why I didn't make it to the why I'm not in the 2024 Olympics.
Which is very funny, but
it's like, you know, people who are like, you know, in their high school during high school they were gymnasts, but they were like not. You know,
I've seen this. Yes.
Yeah. But like, I think they're kind of funny. Things scare me, like especially if it's like at the bar or the bean.
The diving. I saw a diving one alive. That was like, that is crazy. Crazy stuff.
Oh, the diving.
The diving one
too much.
Well, it's like a belly.
But now when they make mistakes, I mean, to see that's not that bad. I can watch them like not land the dive and like do a belly flop, but I don't like to see them hit the
fucking course. Board. No.
They're like, girl.
Yeah.
Woo-wee. Yeah.
This stream of consciousness.
I love it so much.
Wait.
I think it's like a julienne slicer. So it makes it so that it makes equal and you can do like 1 inch to like, you know, quarter of an, I don't know. It's so amazing. And so I bought that. I got a cucumber and I did his recipe. So good. So easy. You probably have all the shit in your pantry anyway. It's like fish sauce, sesame, all the Asian flavors you love. They're just like what you want.
I have sesame oil and fish sauce. Yes. But I will say that's the one thing about like my most thankful thing for TikTok and Reels is that it has inspired me to get in the kitchen, like, because the way that these people make things look, it's like, that looks fun. It looks, and like they're tasting and they're like, and I'm like, that the flavor, like I can't taste it, but like the colors and like the kitchens that these people are cooking in, I'm like, God.
I know. And there is something, so because there's typically zooming in on their cooking as opposed to like Rachel Ray or, you know, when you're watching a cooking show, it's like, girl, what are you doing? Right. I can't see shit. Like, like I need you to like put the thing in front of your hand, in front of the camera. I can't see what you're doing. Like,
this is our microplaner.
And what are these little cups? I mean, that's paprika.
That was oh my God, buying the mise en place, like the little ramekins, bowls.
Or whatever.
The ramekins. Oh my God, what a fucking good
idea.
The
best way to cook.
You just go, dunk, 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 dunk. Like, ooh, this is my favorite.
It's also more hygienic because, you know, people be touching the raw chicken and then going garlic.
Nasty. I saw a meme that was an Aquarius meme that was literally made for me, and I thought, well, this can't just be an Aquarius thing, but like anytime you moved the chicken or if you cut it or you moved it here, like you washed your hands after every time, and I'm like, but who wouldn't do
my
that?
Aquarius, like, moon, even if I grazed it, I'm like, I can't remember.
On every time, single time, not sometimes, always Barbara,
all the time, always.
Actually wait, I keep no, is that a Barbara or was that Diane Sawyer? What was that
no that's
no it was
baby, no, no I'm saying to. Who was she talking to though?
Maybe that's Keke Palmer.
No, yeah, that's Keke Palmer. What are you doing here? Sorry, brain rot. No, the references. No, that is with a, I think it's with like a reporter from Germany or something. It's not a famous American.
Sometimes? Oh, no, she's not talking to Diane Sawyer. She's talking to someone overseas. And
yeah, he's I think like, it's in Germany.
Always? And she's like, no, sometimes. Sometimes. That means
got it. Okay, I think I do remember this interview because he brings up Mariah.
I think it's the same interview where he goes, what do you think about Mariah Carey? And she's like, what do I think of her? I don't think of her.
I don't think of her. I used to love the way, I will say, Whitney, I miss the way you used to, like, her speech. Obviously, we love her voice, and I think she is the GOAT when it comes to, like, mm-hmm. everything that I want to listen to in a voice. But I always love, I love the way she just, like, she would just kind of speak and, like, you know, singers. And just, like, mm-hmm. the way she made sound come out of her mouth when she spoke or when she sang was so satisfying to me.
No, a vocalist, not only as a singer, but like a beautiful, speaking voice. A voice.
That's what they call it.
The voice. Exactly.
The voice. Speaking just very quick about, there's a meme I love about Whitney that's going around now. And it's just like, you know, it's just the writing and it says, I don't know about y'all, but I can't get through my day. I just miss Whitney. It's every time I see it because it's so true. Sometimes you just realize, oh my god, she's not here anymore.
Yeah,
I know.
But she lives on.
I know. Before we move on to Spilled Milk, I just want to share that we're going to put a pin in this. We are going to watch the George Michael I watched the George Michael documentary, his documentary that he created this weekend. He finished it like they wrapped, like, I don't know, and he died a month after, something very, very sad. And the documentary is spectacular. It's a little bit of a George Michael love fest. I mean, he worked on himself and he was kind of like, he loved himself.
Yeah.
No, he's allowed to, right?
Amen.
Story.
yeah, I'm glad you heard that.
You know, I feel like I heard it's yeah, and then when you laugh and it goes, it's that audio.
Yeah.
That crazy audio that like sorry, Juan. Yes, George Michael.
No,
the Flavor Flav love fest. Yes. I don't know. D is DDing.
So the documentary is really, really good, and we have to watch it. And then
you know when your mom's like talking at the dinner table, and you and your sibling can stop.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you know, she's like, "What's so funny?" You're like, "I don't know.
I'm talking about George Michael. He was gay, just like you guys. You always want me to get into your gay shit. Well, here he is. I'm talking about him. Don't be rude while your mom is talking.
I'm literally crying. Right now. George Michael.
We're gonna discuss it. But Whitney is in it, and she is high as kite. In the video that they did together. They did a video together, and baby, I know that those two were all...
If I told you that.
Yeah, they were definitely, quote-unquote, having a few laughs.
Wheeling and dealing.
Yeah.
Ooh, they were on the slope.
Yeah, what does Velma Kelly say? Velma's like... there we were in Fresno, drinking some booze, having a few laughs. Yeah, they were having a few laughs. A hee hee hee, ha ha ha. Let's just say. But back to Ian. Ian, last week, what you just shared, resetting. Last week we discussed our things that we know for sure, and we had something serious and something kind of more lighter fare. Was that your lighter one, or do you have another?
No,
one
I think that's
prepared?
My.
Or your lighter one was buying kitchen.
Yeah, my lighter
things.
One is like one thing for sure is I will always buy a kitchen gadget. Like I just love gadgets like, you know, for sure. But a kitchen gadget, there's something about it that feels very nesty to me. Like if I'm buying kitchen gadgets, I either am avoiding many, many like big crazy things happening in my life. And so that's my way of being like, this is my precious. Or it's a sign of I feel safe. So I can't tell which one it is, but I think right now it's because I feel safe. I think. So got it. We'll see.
Can I share something that I hate?
Yes.
I hate something on, I hate it on TikTok and on anywhere when someone starts a video or says in the video, they say, if you know me, you know how much I do this or how much. What? Nobody knows you. Nobody knows you, sweetheart.
I think about this a lot.
And the people that do know you ain't watching
these
videos.
That's another thing, too. Yeah. That's another thing. You
know, can I tell you another brain rot video I love?
Yes.
Oh, my God. I'm crying. It's a video of this. God forgive me. She's a much more. She's a food influencer, and she does kind of mukbang videos where she eats the craziest fucking. She's a lady of a certain size, okay. As they say in English, and so she's quite a big woman, and she's eating something crazy. She's like, it's like she's got like hash browns, like McDonald's hash browns, and she's putting it on a Big Mac. Ooh. And there's like, you know, she's got like, she's stacking it up. She's doing something crazy. And she goes, the influencer goes, you know, I've been seeing this a lot online and everyone's been telling me to try it. And I don't know who came up with it. And then they flash into the girl and she goes, it was you. What are you talking about? It was you. Everyone's been telling me to try it. I don't know who came up with it. It was you. And it was you who had that other one. Anyway.
I love those kinds of stitches where you're just like, no.
Girl, please.
Because it's one of those things that you're like thinking in your head, and then the person comes on screen and reinforces what you were already thinking
exactly.
in your head.
Exactly. Yeah. So, so delicious. My gosh. Shall we take a quick break?
Yes.
And when we return, we're going to come back with spilled milk. And we've got some juicy questions. I hope you're ready to unpack your relationship with gender. Ooh. And we're back.
We're performing unwell, well, very well. Yes. Right now.
I am, you know what I need to do later on is I really need to get into this trans boxer scandal.
Oh,
whole
yes.
thing. I need to understand it because I don't understand it. So I need to understand it.
I can break it down for you if you need.
Because she did have elevated. So, okay. I mean, I know the broad strokes. Iman Khalif. Gold medalist, women, you know, female boxer in this year's Olympics. Congratulations to her in the country of Algeria, for whom she competed. She previously tested for elevated levels of testosterone in another competition.
Yeah, she did.
That can happen naturally.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Which is why
she could also be doping.
She could, but I think she tested and she wasn't doping, and you know, but all it takes is one person to be like, it's because she's a man, you know, and
what was it?
It was two of the boxers. One of them got her ass beat and she was crying that Italian. She got her ass beat. Yeah. The Italian with the crying that she got her ass. But they basically were like, it's because she's a man. And then, you know, the right wing media took that. J.K. Rowling took that and was like, keep trans people out of women's sports. Bah, 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 bah. And for a whole day, they were calling this woman, this, you know, assigned female at birth, they were calling her a man and saying that she was trans, and everybody, like, you know, Fox News, everybody picked it up. And then
she's not right. She's from Algeria.
And they were basically saying, we want to see your chromosomes. Like, she's from Algeria. And in Algeria, you can be arrested for being trans or being queer. Like, you know,
gender affirming care is not a thing in Algeria.
Correct. And so now everyone's, you know, and you know, the thing about the right-wing conservative media is that even when they're caught in a lie, they just double down a lot of times. Like, there was even this TikToker who was like, this is why you need to keep blah, 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 blah. And then someone was like, you're wrong. She's a biological woman. And she's like, okay, I might have misspoke, but the point still stands, which is like the whole point of you guys having the conversation is that all you want to do is punch down on trans people. You don't give a shit about women's sports. You would watch them if you gave a fuck about women's sports. If you actually cared about women, you wouldn't overturn Roe v. Wade and give women the autonomy over their bodies. You don't care about women. I made a TikTok that was like, all you care about is supremacy over another human being. It's a different cast, same script. People don't care about others. They just care about it invalidating their supremacy over someone else.
Yeah. So a question, if she, like you're saying, you know, is female at birth and like is not trans, why are people say, why did someone, yeah, like if she is not that, how did it even start? I saw the clip of the one girl who just got the one punch.
Like, Italian boxer.
And she goes, I don't feel safe. Like, I don't want to. And so she forfeited, right?
Yeah. But
she
like
got her ass whooped.
Right.
You're at the Olympics for boxing. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to get hit, mama. You're at the Olympics. That's another thing. I love brain rot. My sister in Christ, like, you're going to get hit and hard. Okay. Like, I don't know what you expected, sweetheart. This is, it's a hitting sport. It's boom, 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 boom. It's pow, pow in the eye.
Yeah.
Right. And so.
She said, literally. Oh no, this bitch is strong. She must be strong. A man.
Uh-huh. Well, that's the thing. So now, because that is the kind of the new juicy talking, not the new, but the most current juicy talking point is the women's rights thing that trans athletes are cutting away at women's rights by infiltrating their sports. And you know, we can talk about that separately, but I'll just kind of explain the point I was going to make is that at this Olympic Games, go look at any of the athletes who present a little bit, who are big, who are this boxer, she's taller than the average, you know, woman for sure. So now you look at a lot of these female athletes and there's tons of comments calling them men. Yeah. That's just like the new attack. If they're good and they're big or strong, that's the new thing. Mm-hmm. But only with women of color.
Well, I shouldn't say only, but the women of color get these outsized attacks about being a man. Because, you know, on the women's rugby team, there are some big bitches over there and they're also really strong and they're getting attacks, but I see it more with women of color.
You know, there are, I have just noticed, this is just an observation, right? This is not a scientific, I haven't gone and compared the amount of comments, but women of color who are athletic and display extraordinary strength or athletic ability, the go-to new thing is to call them men, to say that they are lying, that they are, or they're on testosterone and that they should not be competing against women.
Yeah.
So the issue is not only we want them, we want women to play sports. We want it to be delicate and itty bitty. No, mama.
Yeah.
The women are here to fight. Yeah. Some of these women can fight or whatever, or run or whatever sport they're doing.
Yeah. There was also, speaking of what a white woman did receive that also, that backlash also was Alona Mayer, I think is her name, Maher, who's on the rugby team, that they were saying that she looked like a man. I also saw another TikTok on her TikTok, which she was like responding to a comment that basically said, I know that BMI is over 30, blah, 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 whatever. And she was like, it is. And then at the end of the, she like explained her body and whatnot. And she said, but you know, and I'm at the Olympics and you're not. And it was just like, I love that they're reclaiming that kind of like, you know, that space to not maybe speak to reporters, but even just speak straight to camera. Like, baby, you're, you know, but it is one of those things. It's like, that's why transphobia is so crazy, because even cisgender women will have to experience that. And that's why people don't understand, like, getting rid of homophobia, racism, transphobia, all of it is important, because it will affect you at some point in the juncture. You know what I mean? Just like straight men experience homophobia too. If they're a little fey, if they walk a little certain way, if they have a high voice, they experience homophobia as well. The same thing for, you know, bricky cis women.
Like the Brittany Griner of it all. Just like, it's exhausting. It's exhausting. And now they were entering track and field, or were in track and field, which is so, it's dominated by black women, both for the US and many other countries that are very diverse. You know, you see it in the comments, like Sha'Carri Richardson, you know, why is this man allowed to wear these big nails while she run, while they run, or while he runs? Like, this is this, these are the comments that you see.
Oh my god!
So it's, you know, and it's, and you know what? And Ilona did get it. I will say she did, but not with the same vitriol, because she's a white woman.
Of course not.
With the same vitriol. And for every comment like that under Ilona's videos, there's 10.
For sure,
girl boss, I love you. You know.
Yeah, no, of course. I mean, there's
I'm not trying to demean what she experienced.
No, of course. No.
But, you know, it's...
Yeah.
I was at the pier on Sunday, and this guy, Mark, talking about the women's basketball and how people are watching because of this one girl who's, like, incredible. Mm-hmm. And they're saying... I forget what her name is, but, like...
What sport?
Basketball. And they were, and we just had this conversation around, people were saying that, more people are watching because she's white and good. Mm. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, they were talking about Caitlin Clark.
Caitlin Clark.
Uh-huh. Caitlin Clark.
And this idea that people were, that, you know, the WNBA's viewership has gone up like a crazy amount, and that it's like, well,
I mean, she's good.
But that's the thing, is it because she's white, or is it because she's amazing?
Both.
So you're both. It's both.
It could be both. I mean,
it's both. Caitlin Clark has a Nike sneaker now, and there are players who have been around for a lot longer who don't have those same kinds of deals and are really, really good. Yeah. Caitlin Clark is just the new, but she's not, you know. You know, there's amazing players, Aja Wilson, all these other iconic, Brittany Griner, these iconic WNBA players who've been in the game. Caitlin is just new.
Yeah, it's like that old school trope. It's like, if you're black, then of course you should be good at basketball. That most black people are good at but when the white girl's good at basketball, it's like, oh, white man can jump. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, tale as old as time.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It is both. She can be good, but there's something to be said about, and you know, even within the black community of like colorism, and like the lighter you are, the more palatable you are. Blah, blah, blah. Mm. But what I love about girls like Simone and Sha'Carri and, you know, Rebecca, these Olympians are showing that, you know, the girls are coming through, the dark skinned girls are coming through, like, sit down. You know, but what's also hard is that they have to be 5, 6, 7 times better for people to even notice, which is also unfair. But again, that is an entire podcast in and of itself. So
yeah, and a quick congratulations to all three of our black female stars: Miss Simone Biles, who came in with a silver; Miss Jordan Chiles, who came in with bronze last minute. She didn't even know the coaches did an inquiry with her scores, which I thought was crazy.
Yep.
That she literally thought, like, what? Huh? Huh? That's just like that. How fun! A true surprise. Mm-hmm. And then our girl, I don't know why I love her so much, but Rebecca Andrade, she is the girl right now.
Really, truly. And like, for Simone to be like, I'm tired of competing against her. Like, it's enough. Like, she said that, and it's
she
like,
did?
Yeah. She's like, she's so good, you guys. Like, I'm tired of competing against her. Like, you know, and one of my favorite things to watch during the Olympics is the like camaraderie they have.
Yeah.
Like, they're competing for their countries, but they're also like, it's so nice to see like Brazil and the US and like giving each other hugs, because they're all they're very, very much fans of each other. Yeah. And like even some of the girls from I think it was the UK were watching Simone's routine, and they like knew some of her moves and were like doing them with her from on the side. And I just love that. It really is one of those things, like watching the Olympics, to be like, yes, there is goodness in the world. We can cohabitate. And to see those three black girls up there was wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she's overcome so much, you know, and I think that, you know, the Olympics is a, is interesting because there are the sports in which, you know, the rich kids do well, right? Because they had the access to do the privates and to do the summer swimming summer camp. And they had the tutors so that they could do well in school and take time off so that they could get a good SAT score in addition to their swimming, so they could go to Princeton or Yale. You know what I mean? Like, this is all a very blind picture. Yeah. You know, these things help. Right. But I think the Olympics often, you know, and sure, it's somewhat a cliche, right? The story of the poor athlete who has to overcome so much and has to fight tooth and nail to get recognized and to find trainers and fundraise and make it work. And that's, it is Rebecca's story, but that's a trope because those stories are meaningful and they still do move people. And we highlight them every time because they're special and they're important. And you know, Rebecca is from a favela in Brazil and very humble, humble beginnings.
Yeah.
And she is, you know, surrounded by or grew up with the support of her siblings who helped her because she had to overcome so much just to get to and from practice and accompanying her so she wouldn't be alone. And, you know, that's that I, that gold medal will feel good for her family, of course, but for Brazil. And that's, for Brazil, that's, that's what these things are really. I love when a country that does, it doesn't excel in one sport really gets to show off a bit. It's fun.
Like the forget her name, something Julian, who run for St. Lucia and got St. Lucia their first Olympic medal ever.
For what? For what
she
sport?
The girl that beat Sha'Carri Richardson. I forget her name.
Wow.
Hold on.
Wait, like actually beat Sha'Carri?
Yeah.
Oh, work.
Yeah.
Okay, hold on. I'm going to look it up just so we have it. Richardson.
Este pelo está largo. Está
tan... Her name is Julian Alfred from St. Lucia.
Wow.
And even just to see like the live play of like, you know, the country's watching her do this, and just to see them celebrating in the streets, like ladies in their like skirts and purses, like they still have their pocketbooks on and they're like jumping up and down, like,
oh my God,
you know, or like, you know, when Simone's going and they show, you know, a gymnastics gym in Texas, and it's a bunch of little girls, and it's like the little black girls are there, like watching her, like seeing her succeed, and like because she did, they can. Like, it's just, I love the Olympics. It's so, so wonderful.
Yeah. And I also realized that I'm not, my kids, no music, no theater, no dance for the kids. It's just sports and science. Enough artists. No more art. I need an engineer who codes and who has an Olympic sport. Enough. Be in shape. Be happy. No performance of any kind unless it's on the athletic field. I just love these athletes so much. Although it must be hard to like have these careers, but like, you know, maybe not for swimmers, but some of these sports, it's like they're not lucrative, you know, so you have to just like dedicate yourself to it. But I also love the sports that are like for hobbyists, kind of. Do you know what I mean? Like people who just like pursue something because they really love it, and then they can do it at the Olympics, you know? You know, because they really love it. Oh, did you watch any of the speed walking?
Yeah, that was funny. I mean, sorry. I'm sorry, but it was funny. Like,
I could fuck that up, I think. I think I'd give you a 20:38.
Yeah, I could see that.
I don't know what that means. Oh,
time.
Okay. I'd be ready for those Olympics if they're going to be.
Oh, 2038. Oh, I see what you mean.
Yeah. So
wow.
Shall we get into some spilled milk?
Let's yes. Do it. Yeah. All this talk of athleticism and sports, and now I'm hungry, so let's talk about milk.
Dame leche. Dame leche. Have I told the Dame leche story on this podcast?
I can't remember.
It's a classic story in the Juan Torres Falcon home. I'll share it again many times throughout my life. When I was a little kid, I used to drink a gallon of milk a day. That's the truth. Okay. A gallon of milk every single day. And my mom didn't breastfeed. Well, she liked it a little bit, but she really couldn't. And then, so I was just like always on formula and then milk, like whole milk. And my mom worked a lot. So my grandma, I would sleep in a twin bed next to my grandma's bed, right? In her bedroom. And throughout the night, she had a cooler that she would bring to the bedroom with bottles in it filled with milk. And my grandma and I would say, dame leche. And she'd pan me a bottle. Dame leche. And she'd hand me a bottle. And then if we'd run out of milk and there was nothing left, and I would say, dame leche, which is give me milk. And she'd go, no hay. And I go, dame algo. that we don't have any. And then I would go, give me something. She said that she would give me Coca-Cola, orange juice, like whatever she had. She just had to give me something that was flavored so I would go to sleep.
Interesting.
Oh my God. That's really okay. Funny.
Our first question is from Oscar in Kansas City. Oscar writes, I came out in my early 20s, and now in my 30s, I realize I might be more fluid in my sexuality than I initially thought. How do I navigate this evolving understanding of myself without invalidating my past experiences and relationships?
Suck on them titties. No, I'm
yeah, exactly, baby. The world is now your Oscar.
Yeah. Is that what he means? Like by being more fluid, it's not just like gay men. It's like I'm interested in women as well. Is that what
maybe? Or maybe trans women or trans, like you never know. Like
right.
You never know.
They're not super specific, but I will say, like, I think that that's beautiful. I think it's wonderful to, you know, I think a lot of us when we come out, we're like, we have to be so like staunch in our stance of who we are, because we have to be unwavering, because people are going to question it. They're going to say like, no, it's just a phase. Like you've heard all the coming out stories, but I think the same could be said about if you were to open up and be like, oh, I think I would like to date a girl. And, you know, just being in a room of gay men, like you can throw that out there and be like, yeah, right, Miss Thing, what are you going to do? Blah, blah, blah. And so I can totally see the trepidation around that. But I would say the same way you might have, you know, done your thing when you were coming out of the closet as a gay man, you can also try and do your thing the same way on the opposite side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would, you know, I think that you're going to, it's kind of fun because, you know, if you expand the amount of things that you like, there are more things to like. and that can be very exciting. You know, you're expanding what's available to you and what's available to your heart and to your body. And your world is going to get bigger. I'll speak to, you know, we'll get to the invalidate your personal, your past. We'll get to the second part of your question in a second, but I want to make sure that some people may snicker or jeer, or especially other gay men, cis gay men, they are gonna knock at it like, girl, really, what yeah. You're gonna do what? And you just stand in your truth, and they're not gonna get it because they're they're
often holding on to their own
they're closed-minded and they don't understand how that could be possible.
Yeah, but
stand in your truth, and like, you know what, if you have a girlfriend,
ooh,
like bring your girlfriend to hang out with your friends. Like, don't hide it because they're going to be antsy about it at the beginning. It's going to challenge them for sure.
Yeah.
But that's okay. And things may change a little bit, but that's natural. Things
and
have
call
to
them
change.
Hypocrites to their face if they do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's hypocritical. It's and a little
Mm-hmm. And then what does he say? How do I navigate this evolving understanding of myself without invalidating my past experiences and relationships? All of that's true. Yeah, everything you did, everything that's came before you, all the other coconuts with which you fell before, all those other coconuts, they're still with you, baby.
Yeah, and you know, we say this a lot, but like, you're allowed to change your mind. And this isn't as, you know, it's not as quick as like, I don't want to go on that trip anymore. But like, just the fact that you're even asking the question in this way, that you're aware of how it would seem because there's been so much context before this moment, mm-hmm. to me says that you're at a crossroads with like a new way of possible life. Like, yes. And that is, I would have many questions. And I think like one, yeah. it's like so nice that someone is so comfortable that you can share this with us. And like, because now I'm just like, my God, like how many ways am I not allowing my new selves of myself to be, yeah. And like, and I just think if you hopefully have a group of friends who are supportive and who have kind of been there with you, like I would just hope them capable enough to receive the information and hold your hand. And also like, they're going to learn by just what you said, like you just showing up and being like, this is the thing. And this is the girl. And her name yeah. is Maria. And it's giving, just watch the Samantha Jones episode where she's like a lesbian for, and that they handle that really, really well, because it wasn't about sex and it wasn't about her gender per se. It was about the way she felt around Maria and the way a sense of security she had never felt before, and how like she connects with me, and you know, all of that. I think is actually very helpful. So just go watch that and you should be fine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just don't watch the end.
Yeah, for real.
I'm joking. No, but that's also the thing. Like, it,
yeah.
you know, yeah, it's just about, you know, it's like, it reminds me of when people are young and they're like, I don't eat tomatoes. And then all of a sudden, 30 rolls around and baby, they got that bruschetta on tap. Like, they're like, I don't know what happened. It's just like about expanding your opportunities. Like, and sex is really a playground to expand your opportunities. So, sure.
Yes. Mm-hmm. No, I love
you
it.
Go.
I was just going to say, and you be the first. You could be the first.
Be the first, for sure.
Yeah, you could be. That's a callback to another conversation we were having privately around some affirmations earlier today. And Juan brought up this Mel Robbins video that I guess the title was "You Could Be the First."
No, it was discussed on the podcast. Johnny actually originally sent it. There is this great. She's a psychiatrist, I believe, and a researcher, and she's a great thinker, and she does a lot of work studying affirmations and the effect of affirmations on the brain and why they work and why they don't work, as someone who was, she was at one point very skeptical, and her name is going to come to me now because I'm looking up the name of her book. But she's British, and she has this, you know, and early on she was like, I don't like affirmations because it feels all too willy-nilly. Like, I am this thing. Well, no, you're not, girl. You're not. I mean,
okay.
You know what I mean? It can feel like a deluded wish, right? You know what I mean? Versus something grounded in action and in reality. And one of the ones that she came up with early on to help with that was, I could be the first.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I could be the first. Like, it's an affirmation because, like, it could work. It's not like, I am the best actress in Hollywood, and I'm lauded by everyone who loves me, and everyone who touches me thinks that I'm sexy. My soft skin and my beautiful hair wows in every room I enter. Girl, your hair, you know, not necessarily. It's not going to wow in every room I enter, but you can say, like, I am, you know, I could be a great actress. Mm-hmm. Like, I really could. You know, I could be the, and, but in the podcast, she speaks about, I could be the first. And I love that because I have often felt, and, you know, as men of color, as gay men in spaces, we're often, as minorities, we're often the minority in a room. We're often, you know, the someone who's trying something for the first time, and that imposter syndrome could can really kick in. But what if you could be the first in your family? Yeah, I know. There's, you know, no one has become famous from my family. You know, no one has really been able to do X, Y, or Z because of this, 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 and this, because we're poor, because we're this, because we live too far, because, but I could be the first.
It does. I love, there is something about that putting together of language that makes that sentence mean something different than I am the thing. So that's, and even just,
it's more special.
Yeah. It makes it, it makes, it adds,
you know, when I moved to New York, you know what song I used to listen to when I would walk down the street? 'Cause I'm the greatest star.
I was gonna guess it was that.
And no one knows it.
Wait.
Hang on, I hear that.
Silver flute.
But like that line specifically, but no one knows it. Like it was just like, I don't know. It's like, I don't need it to be there for me to know I'm the greatest star. They just don't know it yet. And I think that's like of the same coin. It's like, I could be the first. Like I believe it. I see it for myself. And yes. It's just it's so lovely.
But yeah, you could be
the
first.
We love you, Oscar.
Yeah. Go be the first.
The first.
In your house. Okay. Which one is the next one that we wanted to do?
Okay. So yeah, we've got Carla from Sacramento writes in, I've been in a committed relationship for 5 years, but recently I met someone who makes me question everything. I haven't acted on these feelings, but I feel guilty even thinking about it. Should I explore this new connection or stay loyal to my partner? Great question.
It sounds like you're already disloyal.
OJ. You think so?
That's a little harsh.
No, I'm kidding.
No shade, but you already cheated, girl.
Here's the thing. When you're already thinking of cheating, in my opinion, you are cheating.
Ooh.
If you're asking the question, should I do this or should I stay loyal? Like, you're already putting disloyalty on the table. You're already a cheater.
I mean, that is sure, like the act itself, but you need to explore that before you explore anything with someone else. Wait, like, Johnny, this is this is the hottest of hottest takes ever, because like that's like saying you like she's acknowledging a feeling that she's feeling with the new person and this connection.
No, she's not acknowledging the feeling. To say I've met someone who's changed my world, full stop, that is acknowledging a feeling. Acknowledging I might act on it, should I act on it or should I not? To have that go, when you're on that step to maybe almost doing it, that to me is already disloyalty, in my opinion.
I completely hear you, and I completely
haven't pulled the trigger, but you got the gun in your hand.
I think jumping to drawing gun though. Like, why is it a gun? Like, why is it not just like, why is it bad that she may be noticing this?
It's not bad to notice when someone makes you feel good. What is bad is when you are starting to think of doing something unethical to the person that you love, that you've been with for 5 years.
But she's not doing that.
But she hasn't done anything unethical yet.
But I'm saying that.
Well, we disagree on that topic.
Right.
We disagree.
I mean, listen, I'm not saying she's cheating because she's thinking of cheating. But when you're already thinking of cheating, that is a slippery slope.
I can agree on. But
that's if we're talking about cheating, and she's not talking about cheating. She hasn't used those words at all. She's
disloyal. Well, should I be loyal?
She didn't use those words because that's a more aggressive way to
right.
She's asking for permission.
Should I explore this connection?
Wow.
Or should I stay loyal?
Then I need to reread it. I haven't acted on these feelings, but I feel guilty even thinking about it. Should I explore this new connection or stay loyal to my partner? I see. Well, yeah, I guess
to exploring the connection is cheating.
In my opinion, you can stay loyal to your partner and explore it, but your partner has to be included in that exploration.
That's what I'm, I mean, of course, yes.
But she's not giving herself that option in this question. She's asking.
That's why she's asking us.
That's what I'm telling, bitch. If you're already thinking about cheating without telling the other girl, you might as well go ahead and do it.
Yeah.
If the option of to have the conversation with her partner is not on the table, then I guess be just, I don't know.
Well, here's the thing. Having that conversation is not that easy. So I'd want to know if that's worth it. I'd want to know if that's worth it. And I would suggest, people are going to disagree with me. You know, people are very obsessed with loyalty in relationships. That's like everyone loves it. You know, as Dan Savage says, you know, monogamy is the only thing that if you mess up one time at it, you're bad at it.
Correct.
Forever. Mm-hmm. You know, a cardiac surgeon operates 4,000 hearts in his life. If 60 patients die, he's still a good surgeon. Mm-hmm. If a pilot only has one bad landing in his entire career, he's still, you know, I'm not talking about a crash, you know what I mean? Like a little bit off, he's still a great pilot. And 40-year marriage, everything's fantastic, families, they love each other, XYZ, and the husband cheats one time and he's a terrible husband. No, actually, he sent your 3 kids to Ivy League schools. You haven't worked a day in your life, ma'am, and you haven't had sex with him since June of 2005. Yeah, no, he's been a great husband, actually. One of the best husbands around, actually. But anyway, I'm just bringing it back to Carla, our girl here. And I just think that so much of what being in a relationship is protecting the ego and the sanctity of what someone thinks of us. Mm. And she doesn't say, I've been wanting to explore something outside of my relationship because I've met X and Y and Z. It's just this one person. Be discreet. Don't do anything. Don't go down the road of actual consummating it with sex, but explore it. Maybe talk to them. You know, see what it would be like to put everything at risk. And if it's worth it, if you love this person and you think you want to do it, you've got two things. You're going to split up with the person you're with so you can just go be with them, or you're going to ask for some kind of openness. If you're a 2024 generation, you know, if you're a millennial or Gen Z girly who's open to that, you know, then your partner would be open to that. But that's a difficult conversation because, you know, they have to have a lot of buy-in. It might be worth it for them to let you explore outside of your relationship too.
Right.
But
there's a world where there's a world where it's not like you're coming to your relationship like, hey, can I have a hall pass? It's more like, hey, I've met this person and I don't know. I just feel so different when I'm with them. Like they bring out sides of me that I haven't felt in a while. And as my person, I just want to tell you because I feel guilty not sharing this part of me, you know? And I also, if anyone's feeling this way, I think it's perfectly normal. People feel that. And I felt that in relationships. I've met someone that I'm like, oh my God, they remind me of this part of myself that I thought I'd lost. And I also ask, like, is this person reminding you of what you're lacking? Or is it because it's this person? You know, because sometimes that's something we don't really think about when we're like falling into this daze of love with new people. It's like, oh, maybe you're just hungry in a certain aspect of your life that this person is feeding, which is fine. But it's having that real conversation with yourself before putting something in jeopardy, you know?
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, I think the reason why you don't go to your parents and tell them you nicked something on the car is because you're scared of how they're going to fucking react. You know, it's not, you know, you're fine. It's not a crazy big deal, but it's the, I'm so scared you're going to think now newly and differently of me. And I'm going to, you know, and it's based on, you know, so that is totally the biggest reason why we don't go tell our partners like absolutely motherfucking everything. And
But that's also to say that your parents have never dinged a car or broken something.
No,
their parents, you know, like I think we take a lot away from our partner by not inviting them into a conversation because we think we know how they're going to respond. Yeah. Like 7 times out of 10, the times that I have brought something to a partner like that, they're like, I was having that kind of thought too. And it's like, we're not alone. Oh my God, we're not alone. You know, like I totally feel you. Like, when a person loves you, they love you. So, I mean, and that's the thing. Ego does get in the way, and, like, you know, mm-hmm. it is scary. But, like, sometimes relationships are scary. I don't know.
That uncomfortable moment of truth, that uncomfortable truth moment, is going to be that. It's going to be uncomfortable. It's going to feel harder than just keeping it to yourself and exploring sort of, like, in salt, you know, like, hushed or hidden or whatever. But nine times out of 10, a stronger connection is built from that uncomfortable moment that turns into a conversation where, like you just said, the other partner either goes away because they're affected. It's a lot for them. You kind of have to be prepared for that outcome. And then maybe they come back and it's like, okay, so, like, now what? Like, let's go through this together. It can be a thing that brings you closer in many aspects. Even if you don't end up getting the exploration you want with this new person, somehow I do believe, like, it unlocks us, like, your own evolution and your relationship's evolution. And just, like, that sometimes is the, not the lesson, but, like, that's the point of it. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean, but straight people are different. And this could also destroy the whole thing, just telling your partner. It, you know what I mean? This could also not make it evolve and get better and get stronger, but actually be like, oh, all right, bitch. And you've got to game that out. You've got to test the waters.
You could be the first.
Exactly. Correct.
I mean, yes.
I'm giving you permission to explore it a little bit. And, like, just keep it quiet, girl. Turn off that location. And... and no pictures. Parla poco. What is it, the Italian saying?
Calma.
Pensa todo, parla poco, scrivi nada.
This is coming from a person whose first crush was Bill Clinton. So if that tells you
anything. Exactly. You're right. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But you can also put it, you can also put a few little Easter eggs. You can be like, oh my God. Craziest things you hear about Pam and Tom. Pam has a boyfriend.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Pam has a boyfriend. It's a guy that Tom used to work with.
Can you imagine?
But make sure they're your friends, because he can't go ask Tom.
Right.
So it's gonna be
make sure you're a good actress too.
Yeah, honey. Land the plane. Okay. No Boeing 747.
Oof. No, ma'am.
No
Maxes. We need an Airbus 3000. What were you going to say, Ian?
I was going to say also, like, this is obviously catered to you, Carla, but I would also think about the person who you have this connection with and have a discussion around sort of this new, it is not the primary relationship, but it is a relationship that you are both, I'm assuming he's also noticing this with you as well. And so he needs to be included in kind of how you're feeling, because maybe that would change things. Like, just to know that he would, you know, change his whole life up around, or sacrifice the 5 years you have because he believes it could be something with you two, is great. But if he's okay with just, like, having you the way you are now in this way, like, those are things to discuss first. And I think, like, again, just, like, kind of not having fear to have the conversation, because it's just the only way you'll get an answer from you is just by doing the thing, and is by doing the thing, you know? Those are my last sort of thoughts on it.
Yeah. Oh, Carla, this is going to be interesting for you, girl.
Keep us abreast of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
let me know.
And we're here for you, and we're looking forward to an advanced, open and honest conversation you're having.
Mm-hmm. And men, if it were the other way around, it'd be harder. But I think men, you know, you can convince him. If you can do that, if you tell your man that he can go get his dick sucked from someone else, he'll sign on.
Work. And maybe that's what you need to really see if this exploration that you want to do is worth doing. Because it feels real different when the other person is doing the same thing, Miss Carla.
That's true.
Correctly. That,
uh-huh. Carlotta.
For sure.
Carlotta Birch. Oh my goodness. Okay. Well, and just like that, titties out, smiles on. We love
you. We gotta have Mario on the show.
Oh, that I have mentioned it to him, super, super in passing. And funny enough, actually, we were singing "I'm the Greatest Star" out on the street a couple nights ago because it just like somehow a line came up and like I was singing it and then he was singing it, and we were like finishing the sentences and I was just like, I love when gays who find each other, who are each other's audience, find, you know what I mean?
Yes.
I'm just like, that feels so nice. Anyway, but he would be a great.
And we hope that we found you, the audience, with us here at the Race. Mm-hmm. I love to tie a knot, honey. I love to tie a knot.
Hello, gorgeous.
Hello, gorgeous.
Love you. Yeah.
I'm doing J-Lo.
It was you.
Selena. That's a good voice for you, Juan. I feel like it's kind of like Elaine. There's like Elaine stretchiness, but it's like yours. Yeah.
Bye.
We love you. Bye.
You know what? Great. This episode could be called Brain Rot.
Brain Rot City, baby. You've arrived.
This just in, Planet Fitness has added new strength equipment. Save $28 or more when you join today, and you can be one of the first to try it out. We're raising the bar with new benches, and our new hack squat will have you actually looking forward to leg day. Plus, we're still repping all of the best-in-class equipment we've always had. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more. Just $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime.
Deal extended till January 17th.
See Home Club for details.